Hello, I'm Liz Curtis-Higgs. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Word by Word. Her Hebrew name means pleasant, lovely, my joy, sweetness. But the woman we're about to meet is none of those things, at least not until we reach the end of her story. Welcome to Word by Word with Liz Curtis-Higgs. Each weekend, right here on the Faith Radio Network, you and I look at a different biblical character. Some well-known, some a surprise. I'd say today's woman is pretty well-known. We're going to open the book of Ruth and spend the next half hour with her mother-in-law, Naomi. Now, I want to read to you the first five verses of Ruth 1, which sets up our story. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech, his wife's name was Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah, and they went to Moab and lived there. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. That, my friend, is how we usually read the Bible. Whether we read it aloud, read it to ourselves, honestly, it's kind of a lot of names and places and births and deaths and marriages, and it's all kind of flat, ho-hum. Dare I say it, boring. Oh my goodness, it shouldn't be. Because this is the story of real people who lived real lives, and these five verses tell us everything we need to know. So if you don't mind, I'm going to back up a minute and make sure we really got it. In the days when the judges ruled, so we're talking about 3,200 years ago, there was a famine in the land. This is huge. No food. Starving people. Starving not only for provision, but also starving for God. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah, that is the promised land, together with his wife and two sons, so he dragged his whole family to live for a while, not just to go shopping, to live in the country of Moab. Not Moab. The Israelites hated Moab. It was like the far country. It was not the promised land. They never should have gone there, but they did. So the names then of the family, Elimelech means my God is king, Naomi, sweetness, as we said. The sons, Mahlon means infertility and weakness, and Chilion means pining and consumptive. Oh my goodness. So these boys were not well. Keep that in mind. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah, and they went to Moab and lived there. Oh my goodness. Again, we're reminded of why they should not have done that. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, he dies. The boys marry. They shouldn't have married Moabites. Naomi should have taken them back home. But she was in a hurry, and I think I know why. She was anxious for grandsons. So any daughter-in-law will do, even a Moabitess. And then, of course, after 10 years, there are no children. And the two sons also die, and we're not told why they died either. But there's a pretty strong statement by God here. You see how much there is even in these simple verses that lay it out for us. There's real heartache. There's real pain for this family, especially for Naomi, who's lost three generations of men now. No husband, no sons, and no hope of grandsons. Frances Vanderveld said God was loving Naomi all the while he was leading her through the shadows. He never stopped loving. He never stopped leading her. Even though she turned her back on God, God never turned his back on Naomi. So she indeed turned her back on him. She's now going to turn back to God. In Ruth 1:6, we learn when she heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, don't you love? She was in Moab, but she still heard from God. Whether she heard from him directly or somebody brought the news, Naomi woke up like that prodigal son in the pig pen did. She heard and realized, of course, she didn't belong in Moab. She also knew God was still with his people. God was still with her. So Ruth 1:6 continues, Naomi and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. This word return shows up, if you can imagine it, 12 times in a handful of verses in this first chapter of Ruth. And so 12 times God is trying to get our attention on this word. In Hebrew, shuv means return, turn back, repent. It's really talking about conversion in this case. The first chapter of Ruth is a glorious example of how somebody calls God to himself. And you know, he usually does it not when we're on the mountaintop, but when we're in the valley, like Naomi. So Naomi is about to turn back to God. Soon Ruth will turn toward God for the first time. But we're going to save Ruth's story, if it's all right with you, for next weekend. This is such a big book. I want to focus this weekend on Naomi. With her two daughters-in-law, Naomi left the place where she had been living, Moab, and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah, Ruth 1:7. Yay! So they're going back home, back to the promised land. Then I think a very odd thing happens. It appears that Naomi's having second thoughts because she said to her two daughters-in-law, go back, there's that shuv word again, go back, each of you, to your mother's home, Ruth 1:8. Now, what exactly is going on here? I mean, the girls have already said goodbye to their families. They've already sold their stuff on eBay. They are ready to hit the road with their mother-in-law. In fact, they've started on the road. And now she says, go back. So is she setting them free, which would be a very unselfish move? Or, let's be really honest, is she sparing herself showing up in Bethlehem with two Moabites? Because these girls are not going to be welcome there, and surely they knew that. Now, Naomi does offer an encouraging word. She's not a heartless woman by any means, but she does want to put a stop to them coming with her. May the Lord show kindness to you as you have shown to your dead and to me, Ruth 1:8. Interesting, I think that she doesn't mention even her son's names here, but just shown to your dead and to me. This word kindness is another key word in the book of Ruth. The Hebrew word is chesed, which is also translated goodness, steadfastness, steadfast love, faithfulness, favor, compassion, loving kindness, and grace. You see, Naomi has run out of sons, so she's run out of options here, and she sent the girls on their way. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband, Ruth 1:9. It's a blessing, it's a benediction, and honey, it's a bon voyage. She really does not want these girls to come with her. In fact, she specifically wants them to marry again, to have another husband. So, again, that's a kindness on her part. She is setting them free. You're no longer attached to my sons, but it also means they're no longer attached to her, and she's no longer responsible for them financially, which she would be otherwise. Then she kissed them, very tender, and they wept aloud together, as in one voice, and it means a loud, audible crying. They were noisy. And they said, so the girls are speaking together to Naomi, we will go back with you to your people, Ruth 1:10. And I'm curious why they want to go back, shuv, when they've never been there. And they surely know they're not going to be made welcome. So are they trying to do the right thing, these two daughters-in-law? That would be impressive. Are they remaining loyal to their husband's memories? Or, my personal vote, they said what they thought their mother-in-law wanted to hear. Who has not done that? Well, whatever reason, we're not told the reason, Naomi wasn't having it. But Naomi said, return home. Here we go again. Shuv, go back. Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Ruth 1:11. What do you hear in her voice there? Frustration, a weariness, a longing to be alone? Is she tired of providing for them? Or do they remind her of her dead sons? Or maybe they're maybe their company is a little more irritating than helpful. We've been around people like that. Whatever Naomi is feeling, she said it again. Return home, my daughters, Ruth 1:12. The message puts it, on your way, please. Naomi continues, I am too old to have another husband. Now she's going to make it all about her. And haven't we seen that happen? You bet. Naomi, by this point, is probably in her 40s, so she is beyond the age that men in that time would have considered marriageable. I know, 40-something is very young, but back then you were past the age of childbearing, so there was no point for a man to marry you. Naomi would have seen the situation as hopeless. Bleak, bleak, bleak. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, she said, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? Wow. She's speaking foolishness, of course. They can't wait 20 years to marry again, and everybody there knows it. And, of course, Naomi, our drama queen, you can just see her pressing the back of her hand to her forehead. No, my daughters, it is more bitter for me than for you, Ruth 1:13. Oh, here we go. My pain is worse than your pain. But we do understand the girls have lost their husbands. They are grieving, but they are still young. But Naomi has lost her husband and her sons, and, by her culture's measure, she's old. And Naomi is certain why she's suffering like this. Ruth 1:13 continues, because the Lord's hand has gone out against me. Okay, Naomi is obviously very bitter here. Here's what I love, though. She still believes. She is still talking about God. God is still real to her. God is still active to her. God is still sovereign to her. And as one commentator reminds us, God does not guarantee our comfort, but he does promise to comfort us. He just doesn't promise to make life comfortable. Yeah. So Naomi actually offers a warning to Ruth and Orpah here, you know, kind of a follow me home at your own risk thing. Well, at this, they wept again. And then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, Ruth 1:14. So, you know, not much time passing here. Some tears, a kiss, and Orpah's ready to leave. Why is she able to let go? Is she the more practical daughter-in-law? Or maybe she's the more selfish daughter-in-law? The thing is, it's easy to judge Orpah, but what she really is here is she's obedient. She did exactly what Naomi asked her to do. She went back. So technically, she's not doing anything wrong, but it isn't chesed. It isn't sacrificial love. With a farewell kiss, Orpah departed, never to be heard from again. Once listening to Pastor Chuck Smith preach on the radio, and he paused at this scene to say Naomi was grieving, Orpah was leaving, and Ruth was cleaving. Exactly right. Ruth 1:14 says, but Ruth clung to her. Also translated, embraced her, held on to her tightly. So she is physically hanging on to her. Ruth couldn't go back. She couldn't go forward. She just clung to Naomi. She cleaved to her. Same use of the word we see in Genesis 2:24, particularly in the King James. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother and shall cleave unto his wife. That's what Ruth is doing. She's cleaving to Naomi, even with Naomi pushing her away. That's amazing. Something is clearly happening in Ruth's heart. Look, said Naomi, and she means literally, take a look at your sister-in-law right there. She is going back, shuv, to her people and her gods. Oh my, little g, plural s, her gods, her pagan gods. Go back with her, Naomi says. Naomi, a godly woman, is sending Ruth back to these pagan gods. Well, thank goodness for Ruth 1:16, because it begins with the two delicious words, but Ruth. This is the pivotal point in the story of Ruth. And in fact, we're going to start there next week when we do Ruth's story. But I want to continue today from Naomi's point of view before we step into Ruth's shoes and then into Boaz's and then into the women of Bethlehem. It's going to be a fun month. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Word by Word with Liz Curtis Higgs. Today, we're spending time with Naomi from the Book of Ruth. You can listen to the whole show on podcast anytime you please on myfaithradio.com or lizcurtishiggs.com. All through 2018, we're doing kind of a special book-by-book celebration. It's my 25th year as a published writer, and it's been kind of fun to pick a book each month to highlight. This month, April, is The Girl Still Got It, Take a Walk with Ruth and the God Who Rocked Her World. So that might be a title you want to check out. Now, back to our story. Ruth 1:18 says, "When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her." When she saw that Ruth was steadfastly minded, is one translation, or had her heart set. Now, what's interesting here is Naomi falls silent. So we can only guess what she's thinking. Is she despairing? Is she angry? Is she resigned? What's clear is she didn't say, "Thank you, Ruth," or, "Oh, goody, you're going with me." Nope. None of that is stated. She says nothing after Ruth's big declaration, which again we'll talk about next week. Well, traveling with Ruth would provide this, a blessing, companionship, safety, but there's also a liability. She'd have so much explaining to do when they got back to Bethlehem. But that's where they're going. So the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem, Ruth 1:19. It's interesting, there is no description of their journey from Moab. And I want to see it, don't you? Yeah, about a week of traveling through a mountainous region east of the Dead Sea. And so not an easy journey. And note it says the two women, so there is no mention of anyone else traveling with them. But these two are bound by a tragic past and a very uncertain future. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. Ruth 1:19, all the city was moved, one translation says. The whole town was soon buzzing. I wonder why. I wonder whether they were surprised to see Naomi again. Maybe they thought they'd never see her. Or saddened to hear about the deaths in the family. You know that if the news traveled to Naomi in Moab about food being available again, the deaths of her husband and sons, that news had also traveled back to Bethlehem. You can be sure of it. Maybe the women were just shocked that Naomi had Moabite women with her. In any case, the women of Bethlehem exclaimed, by the way, these women were, it's also translated, gossips. They were friends. They were cousins. They were neighbors. They probably worked or hung out anyway near the city gate, so they would have been the first to see her. And in a chorus of voices, these women say, "Can this be Naomi?" Ruth 1:19. Another translation, "Is this really our Naomi? And after all this time?" It's been 10 years at least, so it's taken quite a toll on Naomi's appearance and probably on her personality, which I'm guessing has lost all its color by now. When Naomi left Bethlehem, she was the wife of a godly man and the mother of two young sons. That's the Naomi they saw leave, so her friends must have been dismayed to find her so altered. Naomi's response to them, "Don't call me Naomi," she told them. "Call me Mara." In other words, don't call me pleasant. Call me bitter. Oh, bless her. She's still whining, isn't she? She's still queen of the poor me club. And they have meetings every day. "Because," she said, "the Almighty has made my life very bitter." Ruth 1:20. "He's made my life very sad," another translation says. "He dealt me a bitter blow." Like before, she's acknowledging that God is responsible. What she's not doing is admitting her own responsibility, the fact that she and Elimelech willfully left Bethlehem in search of food. On Naomi whines, and you know Ruth has heard it all. But Naomi now has a new audience. Don't you see that happen? When you're with someone who's struggling, they pour it all out to you. Then they just can't wait to have a fresh audience and start from the top. Naomi said in Ruth 1:21, "I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Brought me home with nothing," literally, empty-handed. Well, it's true, when she went away, the land was barren, but her arms were full of sons. Now she's come back, the land is fertile again, but she is the barren one. with empty arms. The definition of misery is certainly this: wanting what you don't have and not appreciating what you do have. A heartbreak to me is she doesn't even introduce Ruth. She doesn't even acknowledge Ruth. She's coming back with empty arms and not saying, here's my loving daughter-in-law who's made a profession of staying with me forever. No. It's almost as Ruth is off stage at this point, not there, and yet she certainly would have been there. What's impressive to me is Ruth didn't whine or pine for the life she left behind. She didn't. But Naomi? Oh, she's still complaining. Ruth 1:21. Why call me Naomi? Again, she rejected her name. And I think the repetition makes her frustration very clear. These women of the town very wisely let her rant. They didn't interrupt. They didn't toss off a scripture to make her feel better. They just let her go on. We can learn from this, friends. The Lord, she said, has afflicted me, Ruth 1:21. Also translated, he has testified against me, dealt harshly with me, caused me to suffer, turned against me. Here's the good news. Naomi attributed nothing to chance and everything to Yahweh. Where she's looking, there's no other force in the universe, and that is absolutely right. God is in charge, even of her misery. God is still in charge of Naomi. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me, she continued. Boy, she really is not letting up, is she? This is also translated, Ruth 1:21. Afflicted me, he brought calamity upon me, he sent tragedy upon me, he made my life hard. Yep, he sure did. He sure did. So, Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, Ruth 1:22. So Naomi has poured out her heart, she said her piece, she's voiced her grief. You know, part of me wants to say, babe, are you done yet? Yes, actually, she is. Because as we move to chapter 2, we're going to find some changes occurring in Naomi. And of course, we'll spend a great deal more time with Ruth. But Naomi has gotten it out of her system. And you know, there is something to be said for that. When someone is suffering, when someone feels that God is putting them through something hard, you need to let them get it out. Pour it out. Don't interrupt. Don't have answers. Because the truth is, only God has answers. And Naomi's friends wisely let it go that way. They let her pour it out, and they say nothing. What's interesting to me is in this wind-up of chapter 1, this last little verse in Ruth 1:22, the word Moabitess is mentioned again. Interesting. Why? Well, because we just need to remember where Ruth came from. She came from a country the Israelites hated. It was born out of incest. That goes all the way back to Lot, Mrs. Lot, and the two little Lots, who got their father drunk and had sons by him, one named Moab, and he's the father of the Moabites. So you see, they had a reason not to like Moab. They had a reason to speak ill of someone who was a Moabite, let alone a Moabitess, a woman who dared marry an Israelite man. That's the end of the chapter. Oh, but there is one little important addition. Arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning. By the way, time of year, but in late April, early May, which is why we're studying this book now. The chapter began with famine. It ends with harvest. You gotta love that. God's timeless theme of reaping and harvesting is really lived out in this book. We have two women moving in opposite directions. Naomi, to be honest, on a downward spiral after famine and death, but Ruth on an upward path toward abundance and life. Little bit of Ruth 2. Ruth 2:1 says, now. And that, when that's the first word, it's a change in the story. We're about to introduce an important character, and it's a hint of what's to come. It just so happened that, the message says, Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a kinsman of her husband's. So not a blood relative of Naomi's nor of Ruth's. This man's character is well known to Naomi. knowledge that will come in handy later. He's a man of standing, Ruth 2:1 tells us. Now, of standing in the Bible usually means a war hero. So he's strong compared to the weak males we met in chapter 1. He's a prominent rich man, a wealthy and influential man, a rich, heroic, kind man. I like this guy already. His name was Boaz, we know that. The meaning is obscure. Fleetness or pillar of strength is usually how Boaz is translated. Oh, we can't wait to do more of this story. We're going to have to pause right here. But you know good stuff is coming. Ruth is going to head out to the gleaning field and God will be waiting for her. You've been listening to Word by Word with Liz Curtis Higgs. Please listen again to the podcast, myfaithradio.com or lizcurtishiggs.com. You'll also find a short Bible study guide. God bless you for joining me. See you next week on Word by Word with Liz Curtis Higgs. Thanks for listening to Word by Word. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. Why not share this audio link with a friend? And take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player so you never miss an edition of Word by Word with Liz Curtis Higgs.